Penguin Random House Audio presents Wayward by Dana Spiota. Read for you by Susan Bennett. A kind of wild forest blood runs in your veins. Mary Ruffel. Pause. 2017. Part 1. Sam. 1. One way to understand what had happened to her, what she had made happen, what she had insisted upon. It began with the house. It was the particular house, but it also was where the house was, and where she discovered she wanted to be. It was a run-down, abandoned arts and crafts cottage in a neglected, once vibrant neighborhood in the city of Syracuse. 2. The house sat high on a tiny lot on Highland Street, which ran atop a hill that bordered a long expanse of grass and trees. It looked like a small sloping park, but it was actually a cemetery, the old graves scattered across the rise. Unless you were squeamish about graves, Sam wasn't. The sloping green hill was quite pretty. Highland itself offered a wide view of downtown. You could see the steeples of churches, and you could see how the small city was in a valley surrounded by hills. You could even see the kidney shape of Onondaga Lake, although it was often partly obscured by low-hanging clouds. If you turned your head to the left, or if you looked out the side windows of the house, you could see Syracuse University up on another hill. You would locate it by the quilted low white bubble of the Carrier Dome, named for the nearly absent Carrier Corporation. All that remained were a handful of jobs, the dome and Carrier Circle, a treacherous traffic roundabout that Sam hated. Soon after you spotted the dome, you would notice the various spired and turreted campus buildings. The decision to leave her husband, the act of leaving, really, began the moment she made an offer on the house. It was a Sunday. Sam woke up at 5 a.m., unable to continue sleeping. She attributed this unnecessarily early waking to the approach of menopause. Her period still came each month, but odd things had started changing in her body, even her brain, one of which was suddenly becoming awake at 5 a.m. on a Sunday, her mind shaking off sleep with unnegotiable clarity, as if she had already drunk a cup of coffee. And just as with coffee, she felt alert, an adrenal burst. But she could also feel the fatigue underneath it all, the weariness. That morning, the wood floor was cold against her bare feet, but she couldn't find her slippers. It was still dark. She tried not to wake her husband. She used her phone to illuminate the way to the bathroom. She peed, flushed, washed. She brushed her teeth without looking in the mirror. She pushed up the blinds to peek outside. The sky was gradually lightening with the dawn, and half a foot of snow had fallen overnight. It was one of those Syracuse March snow dumps. Everyone complained because it should be spring, but why say that, when it never was spring in March in Syracuse? Besides, snow in March was often spectacular because of the spring light. The sunrise that was creeping up now cast a pink and gold glimmer, and a little crust of ice on top of the snow glittered from the sky and from the street lamps. The trees, the roofs of the houses, even the salt-crusted cars looked beautiful. And like most spectacularly beautiful effects, it was almost too much, too dramatic, nearly lurid. Sam loved the drama of a March snow. March meant the sky would be bright, blindingly bright, not the cloudy darkness of January or the dingy gray monotony of February, the worst month. As the day progressed, sharp shadows would be cast across the snow crust, Your eyes would squint from the brightness, and with no wind, you might unzip your coat. Syracuse, in these moments, could be a Colorado ski slope. March was different because the light brought the promise of spring, and the snow made everything lovely, freshly covered and pristine. But here was the important part. Sam figured that she was the only person on Earth who thought March snowstorms were wonderful, and this made her feel a bit proud of herself. Always, she liked to imagine herself as subtly different from everyone else, enjoying the tension and mystique of being ordinary on the surface, but with a radical, original interior life. For example, back when Sam used to shop the sales at the Talbots in DeWitt with the other suburban ladies of her class and age, she separated herself. Sure, Sam had discovered that the classic A-line or sheath dresses made of solid colored Ponte knits were so forgiving, so flattering, that tragic word, to a grotesque midlife misshapenness, a blurriness, a squareness, really. But despite being there and shopping because of an insider email blast notification of a super sale, Sam believed that she was different from the other women. Inside, she was mocking the calibrated manipulations, mocking herself, noting the corporate branding and lifestyle implications of the preppy styles and colors, the classic plaids, the buttons on the sleeves, the ballerina flats evoking a tastefully understated sensibility. It even occurred to her that the other women could be having the same interior thoughts, and that the idea of conformity, at least in modern America, was never consciously sought after. No one older than a teenager thought, "I want this because everyone else has it." No, Sam knew that you were sold the idea that you could be independent-minded even as you bought what everyone else bought. You were allowed to keep a vain and precious sense of agency. This was the very secret to consumerism, working in a savvy, self-conscious culture. Her sense of resistance was as manufactured as her need to buy flattering clothing. Nevertheless, Sam also believed that her having such self-critical, self-reflexive thoughts as she shopped set her apart from the other women. Surely. So she still believed herself to be, however stealthily, an eccentric person, not suited to conventions of thought or sensibility. Lately, this desire to be contrary to convention had taken on a new urgency well beyond clothes or matters of taste. An unruly, even perverse, inclination animated her. It had been looking for a place to land, for something to fasten on. So now, not before, this odd inner state pushed her toward a highly destabilizing wildness, a recklessness that she couldn't suppress any longer. She pulled on the same clothes she had worn the day before, stretched out jeans and a black cowl-neck sweater. She no longer wanted to open her closet full of clothes. Why did she need so many, so much? In the last few months, things that used to captivate her no longer did. She crept downstairs and made herself a coffee. It was Sam's habit to check out the real estate listings online. She had the bored housewife pastime of attending open houses. She knew many of the other people there also had no intention to buy, but had come to snoop into other people's lives, or to calculate land values, or to imagine a fantasy life brought on by the frame of fresh architecture. This last impulse made sense to her. She had even wanted at one point to study architecture and history and women's studies and literature, but she had talked herself out of it, and, in what she characterized to her friends as a retro move, she had gotten married and then pregnant instead. She settled for becoming an architectural amateur and a stay-at-home mom, a term she found degrading, as if she were a prisoner under house arrest. Unusual old structures, Syracuse had many, excited her. They were a visible
sample complete. Ready to continue?